Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
From now on, I smoke weed exclusively with white people.
Well, I'm getting high next time.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke that, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
All right, welcome everybody. Hour two, in effect, Toker Talk Radio. I'm taking a look at the chat room. Chat room over on Cannabis Radio. Reverend Richard wants to know, how do we stop these people that are doing these terrible things? Well, you get organized. You join Normal, you join SSDP, you join LEAP, you join ASA, you join whatever group you can. You form a group. You call your state representatives. You call your federal representatives. You go to their offices. You lobby. You rally. You protest. You sign petitions. I mean, it's a lot of things you can do. A lot of things you can do. But as we move on to this hour, too, we got great stuff coming up. We're going to take a look at our voicemails that have built up while I was off the air. We got a great one from Brooklyn to play for you. Also coming up on the show, we've got some data from Ease, the delivery service for marijuana in California. They've got some data on their user base that is quite interesting. And we'll take a look at New York and how Governor Cuomo is coming out against legalization. We'll wrap things up today by going down under to New Zealand, where a woman is fighting a battle to try to get access to medical cannabis. But for this segment, real quick, I wanted to talk about a story that is in the news. I saw this come across BBC News, and the headline was, "Hamster fed LSD-spiked Tizer and cannabis in Haitian." Now, Tizer is like a soft drink, okay? So Coke, right? Hamster fed LSD-spiked soft drink and cannabis. So what it was is these guys that they uploaded this video where they had fed, the guy's name is Chinimuya Netembe, age 22. He put some LSD in the soft drink, put it in the hamster's water bottle, and gave the hamster some marijuana leaves to chew on. The hamster was named Mr. Chow, by the way. And then they filmed the hamster freaking out and you know, tripping on the acid, right? Now, I'm totally against this. You shouldn't dose your animals. They do not have the agency to decide to take drugs, and they don't have the consciousness to understand what the hell's going on. It's cruel. You shouldn't do it. But this isn't about the dosing of the hamster. This is about how the British media reported on it, because the BBC headline, "Hamster fed LSD-spiked Tizer and cannabis in Haitian." Yeah, perfectly legit headline. Four other popular outlets in the UK decided that talking about the hamster wasn't enough. We had to implicate the race of the people or the person who victimized the hamster. In the Telegraph UK, the headline was, "He's going nuts. Hamster survives after thugs feed it LSD." In the Express UK, headline, "Shocking moment, animal thug pours LSD into hamster's water bottle." The Evening Standard, "Cruel thug who fed hamster cannabis and Tizer laced with LSD jailed." And finally, the Daily Mail, "Thugs feed a pet hamster Tizer laced with LSD and a cannabis leaf as they filmed its reactions in a shocking video." Now, you probably don't have to guess what color the guy was who fed the hamster LSD after those four headlines, do you? For the BBC headline, it was the cruelty being inflicted upon the hamster. That somebody fed this hamster LSD. That was a bad thing. The other four had to shoehorn the word thug in there. And of course, Netembe, the 22-year-old in the story, is black. I hesitate to even consider what the chances are that four different news outlets would have put the word thug in there if the perpetrator was white. If this was a white kid that had fed his hamster some LSD. It's these little things in the media you got to pay attention to. You got to be listening for. At this point now, they're not even dog whistles to me. They're just like foghorns. They're so loud I can see them every single time. There was no journalistic reason to indicate who the victimizers were other than to say a young man. Young man in Haysham spikes the hamster's water. But now they went right to thug, didn't they? Right to thug. It's just disgusting to me. I was going to talk more about the animal cruelty side of it, really. When I first saw the story, I was going to, you know, go off on a rant here on, you know, don't dose your animals, man. But then I saw the other headlines and went, oh, wait a minute. Hold on now. That's some bullshit. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have plenty more for you here on Toker Talk Radio, including some of our voicemails at our studio line, 650-LEGAL-MJ. You can call that line 24 hours a day and leave a message if you like. We might play it back on the air. Back after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Boys! Well, I hate to interrupt you when you need, but you done spilled the soap.
This isn't normal. But on meth, it is.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day. Exclusively on RadicalRust.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, FiredUpLawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedUplawyer@gmail.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Okay, well, maybe you're high, too.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Yeah.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 9 after the hour. And checking back into the chat rooms over the break and some discussion over the word thug. Some older folks are like, you know, thug's not necessarily racist, right? I mean, you remember back watching the old Dick Tracy cartoons and they would go after those thugs. Right, a thug was just a criminal. It was just a ne'er-do-well, a scoundrel, right? A goon, a henchman, right? No doubt about it. That's what the word used to mean. Used to mean that. But it's a word that's evolved, folks, and we can't play ignorant and think, oh, I didn't mean anything when I said thug. No, folks, thug now is a racist dog whistle. Thug now conjures something different than it used to in the 50s. Okay. So accept that, you know, language evolves. And when people are using the word thug in this context, we know exactly what it means. Now, I could be wrong, and I'm willing to be proven wrong. Here's how you could prove me wrong. Go out to Google News, news.google.com. Put in the word thug and peruse the results you get back. And tell me how many of those thugs in the stories are white. If you can show me that we've got, about 12% black population in America? 12? This is pretty close, right? If you can show me that only 1 out of 8 thugs in the stories you get back from Google News is black, then I will retract my opinion on the word thug. All right, let me get to another story that was quite interesting to me. Oh, and by the way, phone lines are open at 650. I almost did it again. 650 Legal MJ, if you want to talk about that. You got any opinions on the matter, be glad to discuss it further. But I did want to talk about this story that came out of Business Insider on the marijuana delivery service Eaze, E-A-Z-E. And, you know, it's been called the Uber for weed. You have a little app and then you order up your weed and somebody drives it over to you. So on February 8th, they released their State of Cannabis report, which was about consumer demographics and other trends that they can point out from their data. Now, we've got a call coming in. Let's instead go to that phone call and see if we can get our caller on the line. Welcome to Toker Talk Radio. You're on the air. Oh, my goodness. He probably can't hear me. Got to switch that over to there. Sure. Now maybe you can hear me. Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, hello, caller. What's on your mind?
I was just talking about the subject. You were talking about what the word thug means.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, at least down here in Texas, it can mean like a lot of things. Usually, it seems like it's big in the hip-hop culture, so I was just kind of intrigued about the whole conversation. And it seems like a lot of people nowadays are using it more so... like, I guess, kind of like how people use the slang term dog, I guess is what I'm getting at.
I get your point. Like, I've been looking at this from the side of the media and, you know, white culture using thug in a derogatory sense, where in hip-hop culture, I mean, you see, like, you know, Tupac had the thug life, you know, tattoo.
Yeah, and it's exactly.
Like, yo, my dog, exactly. Yo, thug, what's up? That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I was actually just curious myself to what you thought about it, because that really intrigued me.
It, you know, it does. It seems it's almost like the use of the term gangsta, right? Like,
exactly.
The original gangster was, you know, the Al Capone days with the Tommy guns. Those were gangsters, and you know, maybe going up into the
gangsters or the crime life. But now I've even heard like some women say, like, oh, I mean, this might sound funny, but like in slang, like, oh, I want a thug. I want that kind of guy in my life.
Yeah, a bad boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. I think in a sense, though, this kind of bolsters my point about how the media using that term is using it to try to evoke that racial stereotype.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I hate to say it, but with Trump in office now, I mean. I feel like it's going to be pushed. I mean, that's the truth. I feel like it's going to be pushed, you know, more, oh, these thugs and this and that and then that.
Yeah, so I think you're going to hear a lot more scapegoating in that respect, and a whole lot less of the idea that we need to reform and rehabilitate people. A lot less of the idea that people with drug problems deserve compassion, you know, more lock them up, throw away the key.
Exactly. Instead of saying, hey, you know, whether it be marijuana or something else, these people need medicine, or if they have a problem, we need to help find the problem, not throw them, you know, in jail or something.
Yeah, this is the sad thing, is that over the past 8 years or so during the Obama administration, there's been kind of this revolution of thinking on the progressive side with respect to drug addiction, in that getting away from that disease model and more into the model of, it's a dysfunction. It's a social dysfunction, right? Like people who have exactly. who have good social lives and a lot of support, they don't get addicted like people who are lonely and depressed and mm-hmm. so forth. And just exactly. as we're making that change, boom, here comes Trump. We're going to go right
yeah,
back.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, exactly. And the scary thing to me is just like, are we going to go backwards? Or are we going to keep moving forward? You know?
Yeah.
That's the scary part to me.
Yeah. Man, I appreciate you calling in. Well, that's some good stuff to talk about. And thanks for watching the show. Sir. Make sure to tell other people to tune into RadicalRust.com.
Yes, sir. I will. All Thank right. you for having me on.
Thank you, Texas. Appreciate it very much. Phone lines open 650-LEGAL-MJ if you're interested in talking. And let's take this time to go back to our voicemail, because while I was off the air, we had some voicemail calls at 650-LEGAL-MJ from people. And a longtime listener, a fellow by the name of Wayne, had called me, and he had some things to say about Jeff Sessions. Let's give it a listen.
Russ, it's Wayne Reese from Brooklyn calling you. I can never remember, since I'm on the other coast, what the right time is to call. You know, I have mad love for you, Russ, and I'm calling to hear what your reaction is to the Jeff Sessions hearings. I had two thoughts. The thing that I found what I wanted to hear is from you is what you thought was most alarming out of the whole interview, the whole hearing, what that he said that he divulged did you find most shocking, most appalling? Here's my nomination for the most appalling thing. When he defended the Japanese internment camps in America during World War II,
yep.
after World War II, the internment of not foreign enemies, but of American citizens, many of whom fought in the war. And his response was telling. First he said, arrested German war criminals without trial, and Feinstein grilled him and said, I'm talking about American citizens. And then his response was, well, I respectfully disagree with you that at times of war, you know, we can essentially shred the Constitution, get rid of habeas corpus, and definitely imprison American citizens without a charge, without a trial. This is going to be our Attorney General. And then that in combination with the fact that in the past, although he knew better to say it during the hearings, in the past, he has approved of lists, government lists, that take away the rights of people based on their religion. Wow. That I nominate for the most shocking thing he said. Then the second shocking thing didn't happen during the interrogation, the hearing. I urge your fans to watch Democracy Now. The Amy Goodman is doing some fantastic coverage of Jeff Sessions. She interviewed just a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday or 2 days ago, two ACLU lawyers who both said that the ACLU does not take a position on
Well, that's where it cuts off, unfortunately, folks. But there's Wayne calling in from Brooklyn with his thoughts on Jeff Sessions. And yeah, that's pretty embarrassing that Jeff Sessions supported or spoke out in favor, or Governor LePage spoke out in favor of the Japanese internment camps, the Session being one of those guys as well. Excuse my distraction a little bit here. The Sessions vote is happening now on the Senate floor. I'm trying to bring this up for you. We'll give a listen on the Senate floor as soon as they're available. Looks like they're still taking the roll call, so it might be a little bit before we get the actual result, but we'll keep that on the screen.
Ms. Murkowski, aye.
Lisa Murkowski voting
I, in favor of the confirmation of Jeff Sessions, Senator Sessions.
This is bullshit.
Belleville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
You're listening to The Russ Belleville Show.
I drank beer heavily and tried drugs enthusiastically.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Oh, I could have smoked that pot.
A public service message from the Russ Belleville Show. Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belleville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour, we are continuing to focus on the Attorney General Sessions nomination. Discussions are going on. The vote is happening now on the floor of the United States Senate. We've got the video up on our YouTube screen at RadicalRust.com. We don't know yet where the votes are. I'm trying to get more information for you on that front. And boom, we just crashed the... Just crashed the browser. Okay. You can tell I'm really putting the computer through its paces, aren't I? The browser just died on us, so we'll see if we can get that back up for you. There we go. All right, let's see. The Jeff Sessions nomination, of course, for Attorney General could be a terrible, terrible result for those of us here in the marijuana industry. Let's see. Jeff Sessions confirmed as Attorney General after contentious day of debate. It's official, folks. We can say that we now have a new Attorney General. It is Jeff Sessions. Yeah. According to CNBC, Jeff Sessions has been confirmed as Attorney General. Try and find more backup on this, get you some more details, see if we can find out what the vote actually was for confirmation on Attorney General Sessions. We did hear Lisa Murkowski voting in favor of the Sessions confirmation, and I am looking right now to see if we can get the vote totals for you. The Sessions confirmed, Rick, let's see, ACLU has confirmed that Jeff Sessions has been confirmed. It does not say who or how or why. Again, no more data than that at this point. But it has been confirmed by ACLU. Fox News is confirming this as well through their Twitter account. Let's see. Breaking news appears to have the votes to be confirmed. So, boy, it's a sad day today for the marijuana industry, for criminal justice in general, with the confirmation of Jeff Sessions, who, of course, said good people don't smoke marijuana, and the federal government needs to make a serious message about this. We will continue to focus on this throughout the rest of the week. And I think we won't have to wait long, folks. I don't think it's going to be very long to wait to see what Jeff Sessions has in store for us in the cannabis community. I imagine, you know, letters going out almost immediately to the attorneys general in the various states.
General that with confirmation
legalized
of Jeff
marijuana. Sessions,
who of course.
Oh, I'm I'm looping myself. Sorry about that, folks. But I really do think that we've got some bad news on the horizon here with the confirmation of Jeff Sessions. And the first thing I anticipate happening are the letters going out to the states to tell them that any state official who would license, who had signed their name on a license for state legal marijuana commerce, would be in violation of federal law and the Controlled Substances Act. It was that sort of threat that kept the state of Washington from moving forward with any sort of a medical marijuana dispensary system when they had the shot to do so back in 2011. She line item vetoed all that stuff for fear that the state workers would end up suffering, would end up getting busted by the federal government. That type of letter, that type of warning from Jeff Sessions could have a terribly chilling effect on the marijuana industry. And that wouldn't cost very much in terms of political capital or in terms of resources in any way to have to put out that sort of message to the states. And that's why it's just so frustrating for so many people to have been saying recently that there's nothing to worry about. It'll be fine. You know, he's President Trump's all about states' rights. You don't have to worry. It's going to be okay. And folks, I just don't think that's the case. I think we're in for a real slog here. It's going to be real difficult over the next 4 years dealing with this administration, dealing with this attorney general who hates our position, absolutely thinks that we're disgusting human beings. This is about canna bigotry in addition to his actual bigotry, which cannot be underestimated either. There are some people, I think, especially the younger millennials who are involved in the marijuana industry, who have no personal experience with how irrational, how capricious, and how vindictive the federal government can be when it comes to enforcing marijuana laws. And I think there's my interpretation of what happened in this 2016 election was, in a sense, it was almost like the old white patriarchy slapped us down for getting uppity over the past 8 years. We got all uppity and elected a black man and legalized pot and started getting people health insurance. And the response now from the establishment, from the status quo, from the patriarchy here, is to slap us down, put us back in our place, make sure we know where we belong. And I think a big part of that is going to be slapping down marijuana. We saw the op-ed, and I mentioned this yesterday, the op-ed from John P. Walters, a former drug czar under President Bush, who I am thinking is getting heard in the Trump administration. I think he's got the ear of the Trump administration. And we saw his remarks where he talked about how the reason, in his mind, the reason why we've seen this increase in marijuana use and this increase in marijuana support up to 60% in the Gallup polls, he believes is because the government wasn't sending a strong enough message about how bad marijuana is. Now, it's bullshit. We know why people's support for marijuana has increased. It's because we've legalized medical marijuana in a lot of states. People have seen it with their own two eyes. They've known people who've used it medically. Now we've legalized it in some states, and people have experienced that. They've seen the sky didn't fall. The reason why the public support is going up for marijuana legalization is because people are finally becoming aware of the truth about cannabis. Not because the government hasn't been lying hard enough about it. Okay, these are two different things. The absence of the government jumping in with their typical reefer madness propaganda has allowed the truth about cannabis to flourish. But by no means did the Obama administration cheerlead for legalization.
Now, the best they could do was to stand aside and let the states take it. But if the federal government, under the direction of Donald Trump and Attorney General Sessions, and by the way, Sessions is supposed to be like one of the linchpins in the whole Steve Bannon right-wing takeover thing. They really, really, really wanted to have Sessions, okay? That if there's a renewed federal interest under Sessions and Trump to propagandize and demonize and attack and infiltrate and obstruct, they could do a lot of damage to the cannabis industry. And it's interesting to me how the observers of the marijuana reform movement tend to divide up into two camps. The it's going to be okay camp, we can work with them camp, right? It's okay, we can work with them, it's going to be okay. And then my camp, the hair on fire, holy shit, here comes the drug war again camp. Now, interestingly, the folks in that in the former camp tend to be the ones that are on the money side of things. They tend to be the ones that own the big companies, and they own the investment hedge funds and the angel investor networks and the big dispensaries and grows. So are they just optimistic? Are they just optimistic? Are they seeing the world through rose-colored glasses because of how good the Green Rush has been to them? Or are they being opportunistic in telling people what they want to hear so that the money keeps flowing into the investment coffers before the big crash happens? In other words, is the optimism for what may happen under a Trump administration really just a form of a pump and dump? Pump up the value of this industry before it comes crashing down. I tend to think that. Because to me, it's interesting how the people in my camp are all the longtime medical marijuana activists and marijuana reformers. Those of us who've been raided, been locked up, been attacked, been had our businesses and our kids and our freedom taken from us. Those of us who really aren't making a whole lot of money on the Green Rush, despite whatever rumors you might have heard about me. I heard a rumor the other day that I bring in like $250,000 a year. I don't know. I brought in $250,000 of my life, folks. But that's the two camps. And I really think, of course, since I'm in that camp, the hair on fire camp, I really think that we are in for some tough times. And this is going to test the mettle of a lot of activists out there, a lot of people who've jumped on the Green Rush bandwagon. It's going to be interesting to see how many of them jump off of it once indictments start flowing. Once we start seeing propaganda coming back from the White House on how terribly awful weed is and how bad drug users are. How many of them who've been making big bucks off of us marijuana users are going to stick by us when things get tough? How many of them instead are going to take their profits and run and then just go invest in whatever the next thing is? This will be, these next 4 years are going to separate the wheat from the chaff. They are going to definitely show us who's in this for the reform aspect of it and who's in it just for the money. We're going to find that out real quick. President Trump's going to help separate a lot of these bandwagoneers out of the Green Rush. I can tell you that right off the bat. So Jeff Sessions will be our next attorney general. And don't look for just Sessions to attack a culture war in drugs, folks. I don't like the prospects of women's right to choose or contraceptive coverage in insurance or the rights of the transgender to be paid much attention to under a Sessions Department of Justice. I expect a brand new war on obscenity. We're gonna have federal obscenity charges. You, mark my words. You just watch. We're gonna see the federal government going after pornography again. That's the kind of mentality that's making its way into our Department of Justice with the confirmation of Senator Sessions. And now it's been revealed that Betsy DeVos, of course, she got confirmed as education secretary, despite never going to a public school, never putting her kids into a public school, hating public school, wanting to abolish public school. She basically used her Amway money, her big fortune, to buy her way into a cabinet seat. the most unqualified education secretary. But then again, that pretty much goes with having the most unqualified energy secretary in Rick Perry, a guy who got a D in a class called Meats. He follows the past three energy secretaries who were dual PhDs in nuclear physics and math. Oh, it's going to be an interesting 4 years, folks. I'm sure glad weed is legal here in Oregon, because I'm going to have to smoke a whole hell of a lot of it to get through this. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Governor Cuomo and a little news from New Zealand. Stay tuned.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
But I think it is the prerogative of the states to make that determination. I think the people of Colorado have the right to make the decision that they've made under the Constitution.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning. It's taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
It's no bong. It's for my schlong.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Warning. It's taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back. And we were going to discuss a little bit about the findings of that California data from Ease. Ease is the it's basically the Uber for weed. You know, people call them up and then they'll bring you some weed. But my browser crashed, so I'm having to find where that particular story was. And I think I'm getting close, but looking through the history while I'm talking to you can be kind of difficult. But it is in here somewhere. Well, I can tell you some of the basics of it. And what they found is that the people using the delivery service were 2-to-1 male. Two guys for every woman. And that makes sense to me based on some of the surveys we've seen in the past. When the National Survey on Drug Use and Health asks people about their marijuana use, the more you use marijuana, the more likely you are to be male. If you look at people, you know, just the have you ever smoked weed in your life demographic, the lifetime users, it's like 55-45-ish, right? It's pretty close. It's still more male dominant, but generally even. As far as people who've tried marijuana in their life. And then you get it down to the annual users and it gets more male. And then the monthly users gets more male. And then the weekly users. And then finally, by the time you get to the people who are daily pot smokers, 68% of us are male, 32% female. So again, a 2-to-1 ratio of daily pot smokers of males to females. So the demographic that's going to use a weed delivery service suggests to me they would be more likely to be frequent users of cannabis. And if that's the case, they're more likely to be male. So that's not too surprising a finding. They found that the sales of flower are down, but the sales of vaporizers are up. In fact, a 400% increase in the sales of vaporized products. And more CBD products are popular these days as well. And to me, the best finding out of this story had to do with the self-reported alcohol use of the people using the Ease service. They found that 82% of the people
using ease, had reduced their alcohol intake since they had gotten access to marijuana. Over 4 out of 5 have reduced how much alcohol they drink thanks to their access to marijuana. And about 1 out of 10 of them, I think it was like 10 or 11%, gave up booze entirely, quit drinking entirely thanks to their access to marijuana. When you read the figures like this, when you hear these numbers, it gives you pause. It gives you reason to understand why there's so much opposition to the legalization of marijuana. We already know that it's a competition for the pharmaceutical industry. You can grow your own sleep aid in your backyard. You don't need to buy Ambien. Grow your own pain reliever in your closet. You don't need to buy Tylenol. Right? All these different things that cannabis can help alleviate. And to me, it's not even the fact that cannabis can, you know, help people with seizures or HIV AIDS or anything like that. The real serious medical uses, right? Because as important as those are, it's not a huge market. It's not a huge demographic, right? Not a ton of people that have AIDS, thankfully, right? But when you start talking about replacing the thing that people take for their average day-to-day headache, when we're talking, you know, super majorities of people that take aspirin or Tylenol or whatever, Advil, people that take the sleeping pills like Ambien and Lunesta, that's a big market. And you start talking about undercutting those markets, that's where they have the problem with medical marijuana, and more seriously, they have the problem with recreational legalization. Some of them can deal with medical marijuana. For some of them, it's like, well, you know, if you got cancer, we can let you smoke a joint. And besides, the law makes it so you have to try everything else first, right? You see that in a lot of these medical cannabis laws, where they say you have to exhaust every other option. All right, if you've tried the surgeries and you've tried all the possible drugs and none of them worked, then we'll let you have your medical cannabis. Well, why do they do that, right? Like, medical cannabis is non-toxic, right? It's not going to hurt anybody. Well, no, they do that to make sure that the pharmaceutical companies still get their kick, still get their fix. They still get their money. If people started with the medical marijuana, they'd never use the pills and never go to the surgeries. And, well, that would be bad for business, wouldn't it? But they can at least accept some medical marijuana because there's some roadblocks. And really, only the most seriously ill people are going to get it, especially in these East Coast states. And it would look bad for them to be in opposition to, you know, cancer patients and AIDS patients and epileptics. You know, so it'd be bad PR. But when it comes to the average person with a headache or an achy knee or a little indigestion or can't sleep a little, that's where recreational pot comes in. That's where recreational pot gives the average person the same over-the-counter option they would have with aspirin or Pepto-Bismol or Ambien. I guess Ambien's not over-the-counter, is it? What's the over-the-counter sleep aid thing? Name one. You get my drift, though? That's why we see such opposition to this. It has a lot to do with these entrenched interests would suffer severely. I mean, already we are seeing 5 to 10% lower beer sales volumes in Colorado, Oregon, and Washington. And Colorado, Oregon, and Washington like their beer. It's not like we're anti-beer out here. We got more craft breweries than almost any place in the world. But even among the craft brews, the use is down because, as this ease data pointed out, people with access to marijuana use less alcohol. And that's the big battle that's coming in this whole legalization thing, is the final showdown between the alcohol industry and the emerging marijuana industry. And that goes back to that point about the cannabis industry is so big, oh, no one's going to tackle it. Look, in 1919, there were 1,300 operating breweries in the United States. In 1919, most of the states got a majority of their tax revenue from alcohol excise taxes. And yet, all the states ratified prohibition. All the states looked at their tax revenue and said, yeah, we'd be willing to lose that to ban booze. All those states that had all those voters who worked in all those breweries that paid all that tax money, they were willing to look at that and go, nope, that's not important. We need to save the children. We can't have the children being exposed to the dangers of alcohol.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
So don't think that the marijuana industry is too big to tackle. I mean, $6 billion is nothing compared to the worth of some of these alcohol companies. What is the net worth? What is the profit of one of the big alcohol companies? Like let's say InBev. InBev is the former Anheuser-Busch, right? What is their net profit? According to InBev's net profit here, Anheuser-Busch InBev, Google tells me that their total assets are $134.6 billion. Their profit was $8.27 billion. One alcohol company's profit is bigger than the entire marijuana industry. And that's not the marijuana industry's profit. That's the marijuana industry's size is $6 billion, right? Their profit is bigger than our whole industry is. And so those people that come back and they say, oh, you know, well, Trump's all about business and he hangs out with the guys on the Fortune 500. Yeah, sure does. He hangs out with the heads of InBev and Miller Coors and all these other pharmaceutical and alcohol companies. Think he's hanging out with Troy Dayton and Steve D'Angelo? Uh-uh. So it's going to be tough. And understand that I'll be here. I lived through Reagan. I lived through W, man. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to continue to fight this. But understand that I'll be the guy that'll be telling you I told you so, because I have told you so. It's going to get bad. And I told a whole lot of marijuana reformers who couldn't stand, who could not countenance the idea of voting for Hillary Clinton, that you're going to, in a year, wish that you had voted for someone that could have beaten Donald Trump, because it's going to get bad, folks. And I got a lot of friends in this industry. I got a lot of friends who have companies and grows, and I really don't want to see them having to pull up stakes and sell their stuff and move and have to deal with all the fallout that's going to happen, but I think it's going to happen. All we can do is continue to talk to our senators and our representatives, continue to organize, join our local normal chapters, march, protest, do everything we can to get it across that we're not just going to sit by and let this happen. We fought long and hard for these rights. We got to fight harder to keep them. And boy, I'm having so much fun with the computer today. There it's just locked up on me for a second. All right, let's try that again. I don't know what's going on with the machine today, but it is not behaving the way I want it to. There it goes. We'll be right back after this.
You're not high.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
And the crime and the gangs and the drugs. This American carnage stops right now.
All right. Well, maybe you're high, too.
All right. Machine is definitely locking up on me. I'm trying my best, folks. I don't know why the automator is misbehaving, but that seems to be what's going on here. So, well. There she goes. Oh.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com. and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 50 after the hour. You know, no matter how much I upgrade my machine, it seems like I can always find a way to lock it up. Sorry about that difficulty there, but we are back and better than ever. And wanted to talk a little bit about this story concerning the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, who has recently come out against marijuana legalization. And it's a story that I had up on the browser, and again, now I can't find it. So let's move to this other story. Oh, it's only Wednesday, folks. Representative Rohrabacher, Dana Rohrabacher, part of the Cannabis Caucus in the Congress, has just introduced the Respect State Marijuana Laws Act. According to townhall.com, during the Obama administration, eight states plus D.C. legalized recreational pot. DOJ generally had a hands-off policy. Dana Rohrabacher, who's a medical marijuana patient himself, has introduced the Respect State Marijuana Laws Act. The bill would protect people from being prosecuted under the Controlled Substances Act as long as they're following their particular state laws. He introduced it before in 2015 and in 2013. We will see how well this does in the current Congress. But that's what we've got. So the confirmation of Jeff Sessions, we got some more information on that. The committee that voted him out went 11-9 party line vote. And then the cloture motion on his nomination to stop the Democratic filibuster passed 52-47 and confirmed Attorney General in a 52-47 vote. So again, all 52 Republicans voting for Sessions, all 47 Dems and independents voting against, and it appears that there's a one abstention. And so there we go. It's official. We've got Jeff Sessions as our Attorney General. Also, a story I wanted to tell you about coming out of New Zealand. Now, New Zealand has been moving slowly on its medical cannabis regulations. And this story is entitled "Medicinal Cannabis Still Too Costly for Christchurch Woman," out of Christchurch, New Zealand. The prime minister there has decided to allow some use of medical cannabis products, but the price of them is out of reach for this particular woman in the story. And it has to do with the GW Pharmaceuticals preparation called Sativex, or Sativex, which is the whole plant extract tincture. It's a spray for that has been approved in the UK and New Zealand and some of these other countries for the treatment of chronic pain, multiple sclerosis, and so forth. She suffers from fibromyalgia, has had it since February of 2011. She had been on a concoction of medications to take care of the pain, but they weren't effective and had all sorts of terrible side effects. As usual, she'd used cannabis illegally to treat her pain, and she said it worked more effectively than the medications, but she says, quote, "I didn't want to break the law anymore." So the associate health minister there in New Zealand, Peter Dunn, announced rules that access for medical cannabis would be loosened. Currently, they have to take their case to the Minister of Health to sign off on medicinal cannabis products. Now, she was hoping that this meant she'd be able to get medicinal cannabis products, you know, on a regular basis. The problem is a month's worth of this Sativex spray would cost her $1,300. $1,300 a month for GW Pharmaceuticals Sativex spray. Do you know how much weed you can get for $1,300 a month, even in New Zealand? Far more than you would need in a month, even this lady with fibromyalgia. One of the most frustrating things about this development of medical cannabis throughout the world is how we're taking something that is a natural plant, that is a weed, that is fairly easy to cultivate, something that is compared to $1,300 a month, fairly cheap, a cheap, natural, no side effects, no terrible side effects type of a drug, and we're finding a way to overprice it and make it less effective. It's weird to think that we may be entering a phase where, yeah, medicinal cannabis has been legalized, but it's more difficult and expensive to deal with than the illegal cannabis. I mean, that used to be the big issue, right? Was that, oh my God, patients, they need this cannabis and it's $300 an ounce. Well, now this lady's like, gee, $300 an ounce, that'd be great. Compared to $1,300 for a little bottle of spray. But this is what I've warned. I've warned about this since 2009, that medical cannabis is a box canyon. When you seed to our opponents the notion that you can only smoke pot if you've got a good enough reason, you are giving up your human right to use that plant any way you damn well choose for whatever reason you want. And when you allow a third party to be the arbiter, you also allow that third party to be the arbiter of what medical cannabis is. It has to be a spray. It has to be an inhaler. It has to be a tincture. It can't be smoked. Oh my God, smoking is evil. The only path forward for those of us who want to use whole plant, cheap, accessible, natural cannabis is legalization. Because only legalization says you're an adult, you can use it. Period. No arbiter, no paperwork, no decision by a board or a doctor whether or not you're worthy. You're an adult. You get to use it. This continued battle for medical cannabis can only lead to the bottom line for GW Pharmaceuticals. The continuation of saying that marijuana is only a medicine, should only be available for very sick people, leads us straight into the waiting arms of the investors in GW Pharmaceuticals. It guarantees that they're going to do everything in their power to make sure marijuana fits in that pill bottle, that fits that pill paradigm. They're going to make it expensive. They're going to make it something you have to keep coming back to get, something you have to depend on them for. And that's contrary to what the miracle of medical marijuana is. The miracle of medical marijuana isn't that it's a plant that can relieve a lot of symptoms and such. I mean, that true enough, that's miraculous. But the real miracle is that it shatters the paradigm of having to go to the learned men in the white coats with the special degrees to get our healing. Medical marijuana makes it so we can grow our own medicine. We can take care of ourselves. We can cut the middleman out of the whole equation. But if you keep fighting for medical marijuana only, you're advocating for the middleman. You're asking for the pharmaceuticalization of cannabis. I don't know how clear it can be. Oh, boy. Well, that sound means that we're done. Time flies when you legalize. The first hour video replay of this show will be available on YouTube after the show. And the first hour podcast will be available on CannabisRadio.com or through all the usual outlets on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Hour two is just for you live listeners and live viewers. And once the Radical Russ VIP site is up, you'll be able to get your replays of hour two there. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Bellville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, SoundCloud, Snapchat, LinkedIn, and Boise State University's 2400 baud modem bulletin board system from 1985.